Okay, we're going to get started on a... Okay, we're waiting for a quorum, but we are going to go ahead and get started and have Representative Hawes start to present his bill. And hopefully we can get enough members here and call the meeting to order with quorum. Members, we're going to have House File 1850 Hawes first, then we're going to walk through the Omnibus Early Childhood Finance Delete All, then we will have some public testimony. So a very full meeting today.
We have our bill as it is, right?
Welcome to the committee, Representative Hawes.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to move your bill. Oops, can't move it yet because we don't have a quorum yet. So why don't you go ahead and tell us about your bill.
Thank you. I have renamed this bill the Darwin Bill. That's because it has gone through some rapid evolution. I want you to remind that this is for the youth, you know, so don't pick on me. the bill is a best practice bill, I think. It upgrades the dignity of ABE a little bit by putting them, asking that they be put on the workforce council. It establishes four collaborative projects, probably easier to be called collaboratives than projects. They are in geographical areas and maybe also for some specific criteria where people feel weakness might be involved. There is 10 goals for those collaborative projects to work on, as well as a listing of who should be in the collaborative, and I think it listed out 6 or 7 of those collaborative areas. Some of the things that would be obvious would be in looking for a duplication, also in a memorandum of understanding so that they have a written agreement, rather informal, but a written agreement between organizations. An interesting spot for one of the collaboratives we listed out would be in one of the 6 workforce centers that are in and under Minsky Roof. And the 2 that are asking for that position, I believe, is St. Cloud and Winona, I believe, are both under that. I think some good things will come of this. ABE students are evolving into some very talented folks because of demographic change, and this gives us an opportunity to get them closer to the next step for going to a college and into the workforce. So I think it's good that we look at this. It isn't so complex that they couldn't be doing it on their own, but when we direct it, other parties have to join them because we're the boss, and that makes it work a little better. I would stand for questions if you would like, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Hawes, first of all, we have a quorum now, so I'd like to call the meeting to order. Next, I would like to move your bill, move that House File 1850 be recommended to pass and placed on a general register. Representative Hawes, do you have testifiers? Would you like them to?
There is people that are willing to testify or answer questions. We have pretty good peace in the valley, or at least consensus on the side of the hill, I think. You know, one of those. Very close to all peace in the valley. We have a testifier here. If you would like to say a few words, introduce yourself.
Sure. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ann Olson. I'm the director of the Minnesota Workforce Council Association, which represents the cooperative efforts of the local employment and training providers, which is one of the partners in the workforce centers across the state. And some of the most important relationships that the workforce councils have are with local employers, workforce center partners, MNSCU, adult basic education and welfare works programs, and we're committed to our partnerships to continuously improve the services that we're able to provide to the clients that walk into the workforce centers. We're very appreciative of Representative Hodge for working with all of us to modify his original bill to make sure that it's still achieving the goals that he has, but allowing us to kind of work out some best practices and identify those at the local level rather than doing a total reorganization right off the bat. And we're hoping that that'll provide some information by doing the collaborative projects across the state of where things are working, where the partnerships could be a little bit more closely aligned, and bring that information back to you so that you have some ideas to work with as we move forward as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sitrum-Hyson. Do you want to make some comments as well?
Briefly, I would like to speak. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Tom Sitrum-Hyson, and I represent Literacy Minnesota, which is the statewide advocacy group for adult basic education. And I'd just like to begin by thanking the committee for your strong and ongoing support of ABE. We appreciate it greatly. We like being in the committee, and whatever happens, we want to stay in this committee. Also would like to acknowledge that the very important language to us, the very important language change, which was made to the original bill, which, as you know, would have transferred ABE from the Department of Education into MNSCU. No offense to MNSCU, but we like being in the Department of Education, and we feel that our purpose aligns very closely with community education and other educational initiatives. We also like the idea of some collaboratives to experiment and see how we might work better together. One thing I want to mention, however, is as you're aware, adult basic education does not do just workforce preparation. We do a great deal of work in terms of family literacy, with collaboratively with ECFE, a lot of ESL, a lot of civics and citizenship preparation. So I just guess my caution I would be that we would not like to be totally redefined as only a workforce preparation service. That's certainly a very important part of what we do, but it's not all of what we do. We're very able to be very flexible, close to the ground right now, and adapt very quickly to changes in the community, such as the arrival several years ago of many hundreds of people, Hmong people from the Watt, and we were able to quickly begin numerous classes in the community to teach them intensive work-related English. So we want to maintain that flexibility. We also are very strongly committed to working with MNSCU and workforce centers and the other parties mentioned in the bill. We already do memorandums of understanding under state law with all of those groups, and hopefully this will make those memorandums of understanding a little bit more life-filled. We also do have a little bit of concern, not asking for an appropriation, but just being aware that this will require in some way some allocations and resources in some way. Not an allocation for the legislature, but either some stimulus money or some fast-track money. For instance, if all these systems are going to work together effectively, it's going to be very crucial that we have some kind of a common data collection and analysis system. And right now, we all have our own system. So we're aware of the fact that while the purposes are very good and we support them, there's certainly some barriers along the way that we'll need to sort of creatively address and hopefully with us over time, the help of this committee and other committees in the legislature. I guess that concludes my remarks. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I see we have one more person at the table. Would you like to introduce yourself? And
yes, Madam Chair. My name is Michael Murphy. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and if there can be some crosstalk here, we take no offense at the comments that were just made. I think that we're excited about the opportunity that this bill presents, but I want to draw your attention as well to, let me say first why I think we're excited. We know that a child's aspirations are tied to a parent's aspirations and vice versa. And we know that more and more of the jobs of the future are going to require at least 2 years of college or college-like preparation. And we see this as putting Minnesota in a strong position to be able to recover from the recession we're now experiencing with the most productive workers. But I did also want to draw your attention to another project that may inform this one. ABE and the Department of Employment and Economic Development and MNSCU are at work on a Joyce Foundation project, which is called Shifting Gears, Building Bridges for Low-Wage and Low-Skilled People to Move into the Middle Class. We have 7 incubators operating throughout the state, which also have as partners social service agencies. And we're hoping that the kind of collaborative that Representative Haas was talking about, the kind of incubator project we have going with the Joyce Foundation, will call for statewide transformative changes in policies and procedures in order to make these kinds of services seamless, can only help us in the long run, and I'm here to support this bill. Thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions? Mm-hmm. Representative Biffkin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Haas, what is the incentive for collaborating or potentially collaborating agencies to come together and create these projects, particularly when There is no funding, and there is a whole list of goals and must-haves for these projects to be considered. Why would they do that? I know we're all altruistic, but at some point, the dollars and cents have to play into this as well.
Madam Chair?
Pause.
Representative, many of them are attempting to do that now.
Okay.
This is a little bit of firming up that they should be doing this. If you were just directly their boss, they'd probably all be doing it. This is asking them to act collaboratively. I think maybe sometime it may require money, but it may also not. And we are addressing that in this bill, that if it does in the third year, they should be telling us about it when it goes in. I can remember one time the administrator, city administrator in the city I was working for, complained to the president of the council that not all the department heads were working together and giving 100%. And the president of the council said, well, why don't you put that on your agenda at the next department head meeting? He said, we don't do department head meetings. Oh, really? You don't do that? We did department head meetings from there on out. Things improved, and by golly, it didn't raise the budget. It probably lowered it a little bit. This is calling partners together that should be working together. And one of the partners, I actually got a call and said, why are they on the list? The housing project. Why would you put those on the list? I said, where do the people live that are taking your ABE course? Oh, yeah, they do, don't they? Thank you very much. They do. So that project, maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago, did not need to be on the list. But it should be a big player right now. So all this does is good management, good best practice, something that they're doing, and we're firming up and saying you should. What would be rewarding for me if I was your organization is that I would come back and show you very proudly what I have accomplished and how it's different. Does that answer your question? It sure was a lot of words.
Representative Biskin?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Howell, you're getting this political speech down very well, and I do appreciate it. No, it did answer my question. However, there has to be some incentive, and I see no incentive here. And sometimes, I hate to say it, but maybe in trying financial times, a stick can be an incentive as well as a carrot. And so maybe as this moves forward, I also see some shalls as it pertains to the Workforce Development Council. They shall convene a meeting. They shall solicit for projects. They shall select projects, meaning they're going to have to spend time reviewing project proposals that come forward. Was there a fiscal note requested for the costs that will be incurred by the Workforce Development Council?
There has been. Madam Chair, Representative, there is no fiscal note. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Any other questions, Representative Mariani?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative House. I think you have a very good bill. I looked at the first bill and I had a whole lot of concerns.
Me too.
But,
excuse me, Madam Chair.
I often author bills that have tons of concern when I author them, but then I make them better. But I just wanted to quickly make a plug here that my experience with the last couple of years with the Legislative Commission to End Poverty, that and we visited your district and spent I think a day up your way and met with lots of good neighbors up there, and it was pretty clear from our hearing and listening and learning that trying to push sort of these new frontiers of collaborative work is going to be essential if we're going to address issues of poverty. But obviously essential for a number of other reasons, including our renewed efforts to create more efficient ways in which we can deliver state government and important services to people. So I really welcome this bill and the philosophy that it represents, and I hope that this really becomes sort of a pioneering bill for other areas of work where we're looking at the legislature to cross silos and create some new synergies out there that both are effective and also deliver government much more efficiently. So I just wanted to thank you for your work in shaping this bill in that direction.
Representative
Chair, thank you very much. There certainly is the mining of some real jewels here in this AVE project. And I really think that the incentive here for these folks is because they want to do the very best job. And here's an opportunity to improve it a little bit and to show it off when they've accomplished it. That would be my incentive, and I'm sure they share that same feeling.
Thank you. Representative Lyons.
Yes, I do want to thank you for bringing this bill, Representative Hawes. But, looking at the collaboration plan, I just want to ask, I guess, if kind of frontline people will be represented on these collaborations. I know in my own experience working in alternative schools, we sometimes would run into hitting our head against the wall trying to solve a problem with a certain kid, and the incentive for us often was we want to make things better for the students that we're working with. And will that happen? Will there be people who are really working with the folks on the line be involved in this so that they can really bring the stories and the problems that they face?
Representative Hawes.
Madam Chair, Representative, I noticed three people taking notes while you were talking, so it must be a pretty good suggestion.
But any concluding comments, Representative Hawes?
No, I thank you. I thank you for the opportunity to hear the bill and put the adapted bill and the modified bill into the light, because it is a very good one replacing one that needed an awful lot of help. Thank you.
All right. With that, I will move that House File 1850 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
So it is passed. Thank you. Next, members, we are going to take up, why don't we pass the minutes first, the motion for the minutes. Representative Downey. Okay. Representative Downey moves approval of the minutes for April 2nd. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for April 2nd are passed. Next, members, we are going to go over the delete aisle for House File 1026. First of all, I want to thank everybody for their hard work on this bill. Anytime you're pulling together an omnibus bill, there's a lot more to it than I think we all remember as we're going through the individual bills. I especially want to thank the staff. I know that Danielle Lemire and Emily Adrians, and I think Sarah Benscoper all spent some of the weekend here. So we appreciate your hard work and pulling this bill together, and Matthew for all of your work. I think what we have here is a good bill, members. It's a tough environment with our big budget deficit, but I think what we've done is produce a product that does three things. This morning in Chair Mariani's committee, he dug out the goals that we all set at the beginning of his committee, and I thought, those are interesting because those are the same ones we're trying to do here. So the three things that I was trying to do announced in his committee at the beginning and in this committee are: one, close the achievement gap and work to have bills that will do that, improve quality in child care programs in particular, and get kids ready for kindergarten. And I think that this bill does all of those things. I'll point out a couple of the things in the bill, and then I'm going to ask Ms. Lemire to go through it. One of the first things it will do is it has the Office of Early Learning in there, which is Representative Peterson's bill, and that's going to coordinate and align early care and education programs to better serve families, which goes along with closing the achievement gap. We also have steps in this bill towards a statewide quality rating system. It's going to fund Parent Aware in the fiscal years 10 and 11 and get ready for ratings in our stimulus part of the bill.
This bill also has some underspending in it from the basic sliding fee, and what's going to include funding for Words Work and after-school programming. I know that Representative Bly had a bill on that. In this bill, we have all of the governor's policy recommendations for MDE in here. We have the retroactive eligibility and the governor's recommendations for DHS in this bill. And strategically, we are using the one-time stimulus dollars, and what we've done, members, is they're incorporated right into this bill. I know some of the committees are pulling them out as a separate bill. This money comes from the Federal Child Care Development Block Grant, which is in place already. As you know, a lot of stimulus funds, they use funding formulas that were already in place. We have about $26 million. Of that, for the quality pieces, are about $6 million. And that's what we've been talking about and working towards. $3.4 million of the actual stimulus funds are required to spend on quality, but we are going to spend more than that, about $6 million. We have been working closely with the Department of Human Services. I know that they're here today to come up with the quality components of the stimulus bill. And we also have been working with a group of national and a group of local experts on this. Included in the stimulus as well are the FFN grants for about $750,000, getting ready for ratings at about $2.7 million, and parent aware at $2.4 million. And it also adds there will be a staff person for parent aware as the state starts to pick it up from MELF. As far as the subsidy piece, which is about $20 million, that's in the stimulus. This will be used for a basic sliding fee waiting list, $10.2 million of it, so we finally get to clear up some of the waiting lists and get folks the child care that they need. We'll be doing a provider reimbursement rate of 2% for about $8.4 million, and we'll be funding the School Readiness Connections Program for about $1.3 million. So those are some of the general points. Members, in terms of the actual numbers, and Ms. Adrians will go over those after Ms. Lemire does her part, is the biggest part, we were no cuts with our good help from Chair Greiling. We were able to come out with that with our target. However, there is a shift, and it's a 73-27 shift. So the numbers in our bill do reflect that shift in the persons that are affected by that. So with that, Ms. Lemire, are you ready to go through the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, members. I'm going to be working off of the GE1-3 document. Page 1, Section 1 is the Office of Early Learning. It establishes an Office of Early Learning, and this was language that was in Representative Peterson's House File 641. If you move to page 2, starting on line 2.5, clause 7, and going down through the end of Clause 7 is actually language that was in Representative Slawick's House File 2028. It was creating an inventory of early childhood services, and this language just got rolled into the Office of Early Learning section. Section 2 at the bottom of page 2 and going on to page 3 is from the Department of Education Policy Bill, and it relates to Head Start. Section 3 is also from the Department of Education Policy Bill, and this is making some changes to ECFE. Section 4 on page 4 is from the Department of Education Policy Bill, and that's making more changes to ECFE. Section 5 at the bottom of page 4 is the Quality Rating and Improvement System. This is from House File 40. It was one of Representative Peterson's bills. Moving on to page 5, section 6, this is from the Department of Education Policy Bill, and it's defining an early learning system. Section 7 is from the Department of Education Policy Bill, and this is making some changes to school readiness. Section 8 on page 6 is also from the Department of Education Policy Bill, making more changes to the school readiness program. And you'll see in clause 9 on page 6, lines 22 to 25, is a requirement that children be served a minimum of 12 hours per week. And then there's some additional language that was added allowing districts to waive out of that. Section 9 on page 6 was from the Department of Education Policy Bill, and this is adding a subdivision to the school readiness section of statute talking about program ratings. And at the very bottom of page 6 and onto page 7 is section 10, and this relates to the creation of the Office of Early Learning. It's transferring certain responsibilities from the Commissioners of Education and Human Services to the new office. Section 11 on pages 7 and 8 set out the appropriations for school readiness, ECFE, health and developmental screening, Head Start, the Educate Parents Partnership, and kindergarten entrance assessments. And the shifts are reflected in school readiness, ECFE, and health and developmental screening, and I think Ms. Adrian can go into more detail about that.
Ms. Adrian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've heard a lot of the detail about it, members. It's in, rather than the 90-10 shift that we had previously, this would be a 73-27 shift. And what I just wanted to do was point out on the spreadsheet where you could see the amount of the shift, in case anybody is interested in that detail. So if you look at page 1 of the spreadsheet, that has all of the Department of Education pieces on it. So on lines 4, 6, and 8 are those first ones that you just heard about. And you can see the governor's recommendations are the first columns, and then the House recommendations are the last columns. So if you look at line 4, the ECFE aid payment shift, if you go all the way across to the House recommendation for fiscal year 2010, for example, that shows you that what the shift does is reduces the appropriation for fiscal year 2010 by $3.7 million. And then all of the other shifts are located in this section as well.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'd like to continue.
Madam Chair and members, on page 8, section 12 is a technical revisor's instruction that's related to the creation of the Office of Early Learning and transferring, changing certain terms, Commissioner of Education and Commissioner of Human Services and Department of Education and Department of Human Services to either the Director or the Office of Early Learning. It's just giving the revisor an instruction to change those statutes to reflect that. And then page 9 is the beginning of Article 2, and sections 1 and 2 are both from the Department of Education Policy Bill, and they make some changes to the community education programs, and then section 3 are the appropriations for community education, adults with disabilities program aid, hearing impaired adults, and school age care, and some more of the shifts are reflected in these appropriations as well. On page 11 is the beginning of Article 3. Section 1 is from the Department of Education Policy Bill, and it makes a change to the Adult Basic Education Program. And then Section 2 is the appropriations for Adult Basic Education and GED tests, and there's the shift reflected in the Adult Basic Education appropriation. Article 4 starts in the middle of page 12, and this is the child care assistance article, and Section 1 is Human Services appropriations, and then Section 2 actually lays out the appropriations and the rider language. On page 13, there's a rider that transfers money using the unextended balance from the basic sliding fee program and transferring part of that money to the Department of Education for after-school grants and the Words Work program. Moving on to page 14, paragraph A lays out the appropriations for the MSIP Child Care Assistance Program, and then the riders underneath that use stimulus money to increase provider rates by 2% and also to fund the School Readiness Connections Program. Paragraph B, starting on page 14, line 29,
sets out the appropriations for the basic sliding feed child care assistance program, and the riders underneath that on page 14 and 15 use stimulus funds to increase provider rates by 2% for the basic sliding feed program, to fund the school readiness connections program, and then it provides the money for the waiting list for basic sliding feed, and then there's also a base adjustment at the bottom of page 15. And then moving on to page 16, paragraph C, starting on line 1, it lays out the appropriations for the child care development grant, and then the riders underneath that use stimulus money to fund the family friend and neighbor grant, the quality rating system training, additional quality rating system appropriations, and then on page 17 there's another rider that uses stimulus money to fund 1.5 FTEs for the parent aware pilots. And then at the bottom of page 17, paragraph B, starting on page 17, line 25, is Children and Economic Assistance Administration, and there's another rider here related to the school readiness connections using stimulus funds. And then moving on to page 18, the final part of the appropriation is paragraph E, starting on page 18, line 3, and that has an appropriation for systems costs, and I think that is also related to school readiness connections. No.
With the retroactive eligibility, okay. I believe. Thank you.
And then section 3 on page 18 was from the DHS budget bill, and this is related to retroactive payments for child care. Section 4 was from House File 2088, Representative Flowick's stimulus bill, and this is where the 2% rate increase for child care providers is reflected. Section 5 at the bottom of page 19 comes from the DHS budget bill, and that's additional language related to the retroactive payments. On page 20, section 6 is from House File 2088, section 6, 7, and 8 are all from House File 2088, and that was Representative Flowick's bill, and these three sections make changes to the School Readiness Connections Program.
Okay, thank you. Next, we'll have Ms. Adrians go over the numbers, and then after that, members will take questions and discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, you both did a good job of kind of covering all the numbers and everything, so I'll just do kind of an orientation again to the spreadsheet. So I pointed out the changes, members, for the Department of Education. The only other changes on that section would be, as they said, the words work and the money, the transfer from the Child Care Development Fund for the After School Community Learning Grant. But otherwise, these should be pretty similar to the base numbers. One other thing I think that I'll point out is the fund column, which is the second column. Primarily we have general fund in this committee, but some of the things that if there was basic sliding fee funds that were transferred to the Commissioner of Education, that's why it says CCDF. It's from that Child Care Development Fund there, and so that's where that money is coming from. And then on page 2, these are all of the Department of Human Services appropriations. And it looks like a lot of changes for each area, but they're, what's included in there, it's the governor's recommendations and the House recommendations. So you can kind of see where the numbers are for each one. Some things that I'll point out, what's in there for the limiting the retroactive eligibility, that's portioned out between MFIP child care and basic sliding fee. So you'll see on line 42, there is an amount there for, and that's the same amount for both the governor's recommendation and the House recommendation. So for the biennium, it's kind of a savings of $280,000. And then under basic sliding fee on line 55, again, you'll see the savings of $28,000 in the first biennium under both. And then the typically we wouldn't have Children and Economic Assistance Administration and Operations in this committee, but some of the programs that we're doing, for example, with the limiting retroactive eligibility, that required an appropriation of $4,000 under the operations piece on line 76. And for line 72 for the administration, it's the school readiness service agreements required just some FTEs, and typically that doesn't come out of this committee, but we're doing that in this case here. So I won't go over belabor every single number, but if you have questions on anything, please feel free to ask me.
Ms. Adrian, thank you. Could you go with a total?
Oh, sure.
I emailed with you about that today. And
sure. I tried to break it out since we had a couple of different funds to show what the CCDF totals, the TANF totals, the general fund totals. But the bottom line, if you include all of those funds for the Department of Education portion of the committee for fiscal year 2010, that's on line 35. And so for the first fiscal year of the biennium, the total spending is $88.9 million, and then $103.2 million in the second year. So that totals about $192 million of spending. And then the Department of Human Services total, if you'll jump back to page 2, that line is on line 83. And if you just kind of look over to the end, the last two kind of bank of columns, for fiscal year 2010, the total is $131 million in the first year and about $131 million in the second year. So for the biennium, that's a total of almost $263 million. And again, that includes all of the federal funds that the committee was able to spend. So the total spending for the biennium for the committee is $455 million for fiscal years 2010 and 2011.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you for going over that. Ms. Adrian's in the center. I think hopefully that's helps you understand the bill better. Sometimes it's there's so many numbers and so much language, it can be difficult to follow it all. Members, do you have questions or comments? Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 17, lines 18 through 24, this is the funding to continue the Parent Aware pilot project. And I just wanted to verify that I'm right, that that's for the quality rating and not the scholarship and allowances.
Representative Greiling, that's my understanding, is that when we look at taking it over from the MELF program, that they did put a fiscal note on it of 1.5 FTEs, and so what this funding specifically for is for a staff person, right? And Ms. Lerner, can you confirm that?
Yes, Madam Chair, my understanding is that this is for 1.5 FTEs just to do the administration for the Parent Aware rating system.
Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having dispensed then with that one question mark, it looks to me like I'm very happy that this bill does not include anything with the scholarships and allowances. As you know, I haven't been convinced at all that that's a good way to spend our very precious dollars, and we've had some testimony in this committee verifying that, and I compliment you on the bill that there is nothing in here for scholarships and allowances, and I'm very pleased with what is in the bill. So I think it's on this committee we can all be proud of what we were able to do in a very hard year for young students.
Well, thank you. And I think that you're going to see, well, there is a stark difference between us and the Senate on this issue. They have quite a bit in for scholarships and allowances. So I think it lines us up for a lively conference committee, which you will be chairing it probably in the House, on the House side. So you will have your hands full with that. And I think for this committee, listening to you all and to the feedback we had, it seemed the members were not convinced that allowances were going the direction they needed to or producing their results at this point. So we have Representative Downey and then Representative Kulik-Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just clarification on the stimulus funds. Were we able to get
to the level of certainty? I know there was it was still questionable. Are these placeholders, or are these pretty solid on the stimulus funds and the requirements that the feds might have for us to spend them in different ways?
Well, Representative Downey, that's an interesting question, because I think for this whole legislature and this whole country, as we're getting the stimulus funds, interpreting what they can and cannot be used for has been somewhat of a challenge. In our case, we are working with the Department of Human Services very closely on the $26 million, and because it does go through the CCDF, the Child Care Development Fund, funding, and through things that are funded through that, it's pretty clear to us. Particularly what's crystal clear is that $3.4 million for quality, and it has to be spent on that. And we hope to come to agreement with the department, I know they're here, on those funds. There is a process, one, are we using it for exactly what we can be using it for, which kids are supposed to be, my understanding, is part of the subsidized child care system and families to receive these monies. And then secondly, there are different triggers on whether we match the Senate and whether we can match the department. And ideally, if we can all match, then the money will be spent. We'll know how the money's going to be spent. If we don't match, it could be up to more negotiations. Representative Downey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the matching is going to occur through the typical conference committee process as compared to trying to have that aligned before we pass the bill out of this committee? Is that a fair statement? Or?
Well, Representative Downey, my hope is that we could actually negotiate that with the department and the Senate, but it may go into the conference committee process. I'd ideally like to do that before then, but there's a few differences, so we have to try to get those to line up. Representative Kulik-Jackson?
I think that there's a lot of good investment here, and the Section 1, right off the bat, the Office of Early Learning, and combining that with the inventory of services. We speak a lot about the silos, especially, you know, education silo and a health and human services silo, and to have one person who can oversee and coordinate, I think, will lead to better efficiencies and avoid some duplication of services. I just see that as a really great and relatively inexpensive investment. The other parts that are very important, especially in my district, the $10.2 million stimulus funds to alleviate that sliding through child care waiting list is huge at a time when we have we're approaching new records of unemployment. Parents who can find jobs, even low-paying jobs, will be able to get some assistance with that child care, and all those parents who have been waiting for that can't do anything but help. I also think the 2% reimbursement rate for providers is long overdue and will assist the providers in increasing quality. And that is going to pay off long run. I think we've heard from so many good testifiers this whole session about the money that we can save in everything from, you know, special ed to even health concerns when the quality of the child care is really, it's more than just babysitting. And when those providers have the resources to add elements into the child care that are going to prepare those little ones for school eventually.
Thank you. I think we do have a unique opportunity with the stimulus funds, and to have them, $26 million right in our area, is a great opportunity. We have next up Representative Bly, Mariani, and then Hamilton. Representative Bly?
Yes, Madam Chair, I just wanted to quickly apologize for my bad cold. I'm not being antisocial. I wanted to protect my neighbors from whatever I've got. Anyway, I too think it's a very good bill under the circumstances that we face, and I just want to thank you very much for finding a place for the after-school grants, and I just know what an important thing that is in my community and the good work that they can do for young folks, and so I really thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome, and it was the Northfield students that came up, where I think we were all very touched with their testimony and what they had to say about how it makes a difference in their lives. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think Representative Kulik-Jackson said it best when focusing on the impact on the basic sliding scale. I think very wise investment on our part, and thank goodness we're able to access federal stimulus funds to do that. I think the bill before us does reflect the interests and the values of the committee as we met over the course of the next several months or the previous months, including an interest in addressing what has been and still is, large damage that we've done in this area with child care assistance. And so we're able to win back a little while, some of that ground, but we still have big challenges as we continue to go forward into the next few years. So I think very wisely done. And I do know, the transfers, for the WordWorks and for the after-school programs, and I have great love for those, particularly the latter one, because I was part of the team many years ago that helped design, the predecessor for those after-school programs. And I just simply want to acknowledge that we're in a spot where we're having to make decisions that we normally would not make, and I think we normally would not go into, these unexpended funds in order to provide the kind of support to keep those programs alive, but it's important that we do that. It's very, very difficult to bring back really good practices once we lose them. And not only that, but we not just lose the impetus for funding them, but we lose that knowledge. It starts to slip away out in those communities. And I've seen that in the neighborhoods that were affected, were invested in the mid-90s with after-school investments, and then we lost it for a while, and the social networks began to break up, and so the knowledge of how you effectively provide youth leadership had to kind of be relearned in those communities. So I think it is a wise thing to do. It's not the preferred thing to do, and I just, for the record, want to make sure we're not establishing precedent here in terms of being able to dip into and raid, if you will, quote-unquote raid, one fund to do these things. These are just born out of necessity, and it'll yield good short-term outcomes for us, and hopefully when we turn the corner, we'll be able to more adequately support these programs based on their own appropriations. But again, I think a very carefully crafted bill that reflects a lot of good values has been expressed here over the last few months.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your work. I know that you were on Tony Kinkle's committee. Back, that was my first term when early childhood got pulled out separately, and were able to have a funding line for after-school programs, and the hope is someday we can do that again because we've seen the differences. But hopefully, as everything is in cycles, we hope that day comes again, although that was 10 years ago now, I think, so... we'll see that. Change, I think. Next, we have Representative Hamilton and then Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A simple question here for the Office of Early Learning. Do we know how much that is going to cost, the overall cost of to implement that? And is that going to replace a separate office that's not as efficient or effective?
I'll ask the author of that bill to answer your question, Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, at this time there is no cost. We're planning that it will be a part of the Department of Health and Human Services as well as the Department of Education, and it will maybe even be someone from that department. We haven't finished all of that discussion, but it certainly isn't meant to be a big office in a separate department. It is a person who will, as it says here, be named by the governor and would then go into those two departments to facilitate the various accounts, the blending of the programs, and having one spot where we can find the early childhood information, and so early learning information. And so at this point in time, we don't have a fiscal cost because we're assuming that there is none.
Okay, thank you. Next we have Representative Peterson and then Representative Norna.
I just comment that the most exciting thing to me about this is the quality rating system and the ability to continue to work on developing quality standards so that all of our preschoolers and those people who are getting ready for kindergarten have access and knowledge about programs that will provide the kind of learning that we really want for our youngest learners. And as I listened to the policy committee for K-12 today, and they were talking about reading and literacy and all the components that need to go into that, I thought, you know, the one thing they've left out is really the early childhood, because that's where it really starts. That's where the vocabulary development, all those five components, the comprehension, all of those five components of reading start very young. And it is up to us to assure that the programs that our children attend have components of those programs in place so that they can learn. And so I think as we go about this business of developing standards, and that's what we'll be doing in the next year or two, I think it's going to be one of the most important things that we do for the future of our young children.
Well, thank you. I also want to mention that you're the co-chair of the Early Childhood Caucus, along with Randy Demmer in the House, Republican Carol Clark in the Senate, Jeff Michelle, and Representative Peterson has spent hours and hours and hours headbanging with the Senate, mostly, and sometimes the Republicans. But I tell you, it's very hard here to get things done, both across the aisle and especially across chambers. And so we appreciate your tenacity in getting this out and hopefully getting it through and getting it to fruition as it becomes more statewide. Next, we have Representative Norna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to point out, I think it's 13 years now that I've been on this committee. Not continuous, because we disappeared for a little while. I came back. And I think the one thing that's been common all those years is that we all have, you know, young kids at heart. I mean, our focus is pretty narrow. And I think that makes it pretty united, pretty bipartisan most of the time. My question, I guess, is the bill 1026. What's the future for that? Is it going by itself, or will it marry up with another committee somewhere?
Good question, Representative Nordis. I think you were on Tony Spoh's committee too, weren't you, way back when? And then Barb Sikora's committee. And
I still remember his talk about miracles. His new way of paying teachers that never went anywhere, but it was a miracle. Didn't happen, but I thought it was a very good idea.
Yeah.
Nobody in this room, except for maybe one or two, even can remember it, but it was going to have a contract with teachers, sign a contract. Remember that? Carlos, were you on at that time?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember the contract.
Yeah. Okay, so we don't need to go into it, but that's the one thing I remember about Tony. He was always courageous to throw out ideas.
Kind of ahead of the curve. Yeah. Well, to talk about the path of this bill, it will follow a somewhat typical path. As of sundown tonight, as you all know, we are on Easter break here shortly. The difficult part about scheduling these bills was that. So we take the bill out here to the public, and then it will sit out here until we are back, which is a week next Tuesday. Amendments are due Monday at 4:30, and then we will hear the bill and pass out here on Tuesday. Then it will go to the Finance Committee, I think, that Friday. That's the surest path we know so far. Then it will go to Ways and Means, and it will go to the House floor as one bill. In the past, this bill was split in Finance. When we had last year, you might remember Mary Murphy was over higher ed, K-12, and early ed. We kind of all went up through her, and then the bill split at that point. So we're gonna try it different this year, and taking it since that committee is gone, and we all report right to Finance directly. Take this bill to the floor. After it's passed up the floor, it will then split. It has to be conferenced. So the MDE provisions will join Representative Greiling's bill and be part of her conference committee,
and the DHS provisions will join Representative Huntley's bill and be part of his conference committee. And I then that, you know, all in the next, what is it, about 5 weeks. Hopefully we pass them all out and adjourn. But that's, yeah, it will split. So, but the good part, I think, is it has been a good bipartisan committee is we'll get to talk about early childhood on the floor. And that's something when we get under these enormous bills, the two biggest bills in the legislature, Representative Breiling and Representative Huntley, we kind of get lost. So it's hopefully a good opportunity for us to talk about the topic.
I'm glad to hear that. So we should take the bill home with us?
Yes.
Study it over Easter.
If you wanted to turn in your amendments before the weekend, you could. We would be just as happy. But if you want to wait till 4:30 on Monday, we could also do that. Because of the 24-hour rule, that we'd deal with that timeline too. And next we have a Representative Lane and then Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to make comment that when times are tough in a family, your concern is always to your children to make sure that things are set with them. You'll give up other things to make sure that your children are in good shape. And I appreciate the House CFL caucus for all of us coming together and agreeing right off the bat that early childhood should be held harmless in this process, and then moving from there to the other components of the educational years. But that I just needed to bring to focus that we as a group really came together around the fact that early childhood should not take a cut, should not be lost. So we had the opportunity then to refocus some of our needs and concerns and take federal stimulus funds and do good things. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Well, thank you. And good point. I know that was hard fought for, and we know that other body passed their bill today that didn't hold education harmless anyway, so I shouldn't even mention that. But anyhow, we know that in the House, education has a zero cut, both early ed, K-12, and higher ed. So thanks for mentioning that. We have Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would just like to add that, I feel the bill is a response to kind of going off of what President Lane just said. How important early childhood, quality child care, Head Start have become down here in the last 3 years. And I think this bill reflects that. I truly, really believe that, David Lawrence at the Early Childhood Summit reiterated how important that is to us. We've heard it from Art Rolnick and so many advocates. And I think the bill reflects totally the importance of, as so many of you have already said, the whole early childhood system. I also want to thank you for all of us for listening to the concerns of Greater Minnesota and the quality rating system. While it is great and it's going to do some wonderful things, there are some concerns about that, and we wanted to make sure that there was a voluntary kind of option for folks. And the language in there, that says if a program or provider chooses to participate, makes it voluntary, and I wanted to point that out, that, we put this together trying to listen to everybody's opinion and the importance of all opinions. So thank you, Madam Chair, for that.
Thank you, and I want to thank you all for your work on that. It's still a little bit of a work in progress. We do have about 8 people that want to testify, and you may hear a little bit about some concerns here and there. So we're going to do one thing before we get started on that. Oh, we have Representative Downey, and then we're going to move to discuss some language on Head Start. Homeless! Sorry. Okay, get that one right. It's been a long session. We need the break shortly. So, Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. I really have not had a chance to look at this bill other than just here today. I think this might be the first time I have less than 2 committees running for the last 2 days. So my apologies. But first of all, I want to compliment you and Representative Greiling as well and the DFL caucus for prioritizing education. I know that wasn't a tough decision, so I'm glad that we're ending up very much in the same spot. And it feels like in some ways we're maybe arguing over particulars and policy things, which is good. But I would So you can probably expect some amendments from us. I think we're getting a little bit ahead of MELF in terms of some of their recommendations back to us, perhaps implementing the QRS in advance of some of their ideas. Maybe some questions still about the true nature of the word voluntary. And then I don't know if I totally agree with the silo comments, because it feels to me like maybe we're creating a new silo, and that the real continuum is kind of a P to 16 continuum. That for me is maybe more important than aggregating the child care and human services components with the maybe slightly more cognitive literacy and kind of pre-K components. So we might have some ideas for changes there as well. So, but with that, I think, you know, we got a lot of common ground to work on, and I want to compliment you for being very open and frank and straightforward with us on the GOP side through the process too. So,
well, thanks. Thank you, and we will, as a lead, you've been great to work with, and we'll look forward to your amendments. We just wondered if we have to get a room, so we're here till the 10 o'clock news or something. Or you think you're gonna have a lot? Could you just enlighten us? There gonna be lots of amendments.
Madam Chair, we can provide some advice later this week. How's that?
Thank you. I was going to bring some treats, but they're not going to go through dinner, so we can finish during our scheduled time. Thank you. Next, we will have, I think, is Jeff Harris or Sharon Henry Blythe, or we members. There is some language we have been talking about: Head Start and homeless kids. And we're going to have just a brief discussion on this. If you could talk to us about this, everybody should have it. It is the SF1328DIV page. Does everybody have that? Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and tell us about this.
My name is Sharon Henry Blythe, and I represent the Family Supportive Housing Center. First of all, I want to thank Chair Solowich and committee members for this opportunity to talk to you and to continue to bring up the needs of homeless children. There is additional language referring to innovative initiatives, Head Start innovative initiatives, focusing on the needs of high-risk populations, including homeless families and families living in homeless shelters, transitional housing, and permanent supportive housing. That's language that I'm hoping will be added to the bill as it moves forward. I want to thank Head Start for partnering with us to add some language to the bill to move the need for services for homeless children forward, early childhood services. This is a good step for us. We've got a long way to go. As I said in an earlier opportunity I had to testify, I've had a chance to look at research the needs of homeless young children. And they're on track when they're very young, infant toddler, but they are rapidly losing ground by the time they get to preschool age. And ensuring that these children who are the highest risk of a high risk have access to a quality early childhood opportunity is critical. And as my opportunity to be a school board member, I saw the drastic compromise to their academic outcomes by the third grade. Homeless children's test scores are far lower than low socioeconomic test scores of the students. So this is a critical need. As I said, this is a step forward, but we've got a long way to go. This does not guarantee us access to a quality early childhood opportunity, but it is a step forward.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and tell us anything more about this language.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Valerie Doblin, and I represent the Minnesota Head Start Association. Just to briefly explain what this amendment is doing, under current state law, Head Start plan programs are required to submit a plan to the department, to the MDE, and one of the items that it can include is if they provide innovative services based on demonstrated needs. There's also another issue at play. The legislature directed the Department of Education to adopt an enrollment policy a few years ago, and what we're finding is that the enrollment policy is making it somewhat a little more challenging for Head Start programs to be able to serve homeless families. So we're just asking for an exemption if they have an approved innovative service program to have an exemption to the enrollment policy that's been adopted by the Department of Education. We worked out this language with the Department of Education. And then also, the reason for the timing is it's just taken us some time to get to this point. We just worked out the language with the department last week, and so that's why we are here today.
Thank you. Representative Mariani?
I'll try to be really quick. First of all, I want to thank both of you for bringing us this language and doing the groundwork to make sure that stakeholders are all involved here. On a related note, it's my intention during the interim to have a work group focused specifically on homeless students in our K-12 system. And perhaps it might be good for that committee and this committee to join hands in terms of doing some good discovery work during the interim so that we're also talking about the early childhood experiences. And then very quickly, I would just, there's a whole body of research that apparently is out there that's focused on the stresses of poverty, not poverty itself, but particularly stressful situations. Obviously, poverty is stressful, but being homeless and some other issues just raises that level of stress. And we all know about early childhood or brain development and the effects of stress on the brain. There's a good article in the latest Economist magazine, and I can copy it for all members, that attempts to capture in one essay both the physiological impacts of high stress on the developing mind, and then also backs up Ms. Bright's data information of longitudinal studies, even intergenerational studies, that show really distinctive student academic achievement data tied to the physiological process that gets triggered, or better said, that doesn't get triggered as a result of high stress that's related to poverty. It's really good cutting-edge stuff that I think this committee needs to stay focused on in our policy committee as well. I'll make copies of that for the members, but I just want to applaud you for bringing this forward.
Thank you. And Representative Mariani, if we can have one of our members maybe on that work group to have that tie, I think that would be helpful. I remember from the Poverty Commission, which you chaired, and I was on visiting a Head Start that did this. They had slots open for they would pick up kids from the shelter, and they said it helps the kids because they're going to a stable environment every day for a couple of hours, and it helps the moms and dads because they can look for a job, do all the things that they need to be doing to try to help the family get into some kind of housing, and that it just makes a big difference in the lives of homeless families. So with that, members, are there any questions? I think what we'll do is amendments are next week, and I think you're probably working with one of the members, or you're working with me. I will see this come forward next week. So thank you.
Thank you.
There's about 8 people to testify, so we're going to, we have about 16 minutes. So we should do 2 minutes apiece. For those of you out there, Cisa Keller and Karen Kingsley and Tom Citrum Heisem, if you want to come up. We'll call you up in threes. And if you want to comment on the bill, and I know there's some people may have some feedback, with positive or with suggestions, let us know. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Cisa Keller, and I'm the Director of Advocacy and Government Relations for New Horizon Academy. And I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Child Care Association, a group of almost 300 licensed child care centers throughout the state of Minnesota. I'm here to thank the members of the committee, and specifically Representative Flawick, for their hard work in regards to Minnesota's young children, their families, and their communities. The House has made a stand not to balance the budget on the backs of Minnesota's young children, and for this we thank you. This bill is an important step in ensuring that every child, whether out of need or desire, has access to affordable, high-quality care and educational experiences needed to be ready for school, and more importantly, ready for life. When we talk about the success of young children, we talk about three things: quality, access, and affordability. By increasing the provider reimbursement rates, continuing the School Readiness Connection program, and adding funds to the basic sliding fee wait list, you are investing in accessible and affordable care and education. By funding the quality rating system, Parent Aware, and creating the Office of Early Learning, you're investing in quality. As Art Rolnick would say, there's no better long-term investment than young children, and this bill is the first payment. So on behalf of the Minnesota Child Care Association, we thank you for this bill, and we look forward to working with this committee and keeping this movement going forward.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Karen Kingsley. I'm the Director of Policy and Civic Engagement at Ready for K. I want to reiterate the thanks to the committee for putting together such a comprehensive bill, especially in such trying times, and particularly thank you, Madam Chair, for your leadership on this. I want to mention a couple of things. Ready for K is the manager of the BUILD project, which focuses on helping to create early childhood systems. And you've heard a lot about early childhood system building, and I think one of the things that is really good about this bill is that it moves forward on a number of fronts to help build that system. When we talk about a system, we talk about the kind of financing that's needed, how we're providing access to high quality, how we have standards that are being applied across program areas. And I think this bill certainly makes significant steps forward in making those things happen with the Office of Early Learning, with funding the quality rating system, with connecting and linking a number of programs to the quality ratings. One of the innovations here is that we had a pilot of school readiness connections, but it was not connected to the quality rating system, and now it's going to be. And to really make some changes in other programs where we're starting to see those quality standards be applied across the board. I think that's going to be really significant as we move forward, particularly in terms of getting kids ready for kindergarten. I wanted to mention a couple of things for you to consider. Again, we're very pleased with this bill. We think it targets the limited resources that you had to the priorities that are necessary. Making sure that the child care system is functioning is a really important part of early childhood education, so we like that. I want to particularly thank you for continuing the grant to the family, friend, and neighbor providers. That is such a large part of where our particularly infants and toddlers are being cared for, and we want to make sure that as we're supporting parents, that we're supporting the other family members who are caring for young children. A couple of things for you to consider is with the Office of Early Learning, really wanting to have that director have a position where they have authority and they have a pulpit to speak from. And one thing to consider is whether that director could be part of the governor's cabinet, similar to the Higher Education Services Office. We think that that would elevate the issue and ensure that attention is paid to youngest citizens. The other is to think about when we're establishing the kinds of quality standards that you're putting forward in this bill, and particularly with changes to the school readiness program. We applaud that because we know that high quality means more ready children. We also know that high quality requires adequate funding. And so for you to just be thinking about how do we make sure that we are tying those quality standards with the kinds of funding that will really allow us to deliver that kind of quality. And I know that that's something that you've been thinking about, and there's been tough choices. So again, I want to thank you. You've probably seen this handout, but I'm going to hand it out one more time, which is just these core components of an early childhood system so that you're reminded of the ways in which you're really moving forward on all fronts with this bill. So, again, we thank you for your leadership on it. Thanks.
Well, thank you. I guess this is one of the more gratifying days as a chair, and so I appreciate thank you. Some days it's really hard. But I appreciate we could not do the bill and do the work we do without Ready for K and without New Horizon, who went out and toured this year, and so forth. So we appreciate all your input and help. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, my members, Austin Heights, Literacy, Minnesota, and I don't think I'll be doing my two entire minutes. Two very brief things. On policy language, we'd like to accept our appreciation for putting language in that would increase the amount of funding that individual supplemental service providers get, 20% of that pot of money. As you may remember, we've been trying to get that changed here for several years, and the supplemental services money supports services that are used statewide to all ABD providers, and because of the way the clause is, drafted, it wasn't possible to get the money where it needs to go. This change will help with the situation. And then secondly, just again, thank you for the work you've done. We are seeing, as is common in these sessions, increases around the state, in some cases quite significant increases in unemployed workers, unemployed individuals coming to ADP centers to try to increase their skills so they can obtain jobs when the entire professional group or somehow employ them. So we're really very thankful that you are at this point seeing fit to provide the funding that will enable us to continue to succeed in our mission of serving low-skilled adults. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and it's been great working with you all as well, and we wish we had more funding for the program. So we're going to have to move forward, and thank you all. The next three, Steve Bridgendine, Stacy Stanley, and Tadder Vu. If you could come forward, we have that, and then last we'll have Beth Meninga after these three. Welcome to the room. If you'd like to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. I'm Steve Bridgendine. I'm the Community Education and Recreation Director for Wilmer Public Schools in the City of Wilmer. I'm also the Chair-Elect of the Minnesota Community Education Association Rally Committee. First off, I support the efforts being made at the legislature and especially via this committee this year to improve the quality of school readiness programming for our youngest learners. The quality rating system, program coordination, access, assessment, teacher quality, teacher-student ratio, smooth transition to kindergarten are all measures that should improve our ability to prepare students for kindergarten, which would increase their likelihood of becoming successful learners down the road. Our area of concern is with House File 1026, Section 8, Subdivision 3 that pertains to program requirements. Item 9 requires programs to serve children for a minimum of 12 hours a week. No one would disagree with this threshold of service requirement. Research is very clear that the intensity of a program has a positive impact on learning outcomes when you can deliver high-intensity programming. However, this is a drastic increase in service hours for most of our school readiness programs, especially in rural Minnesota. Currently, Wilmer has school readiness programs that meet between 5 and 25 hours a week, but the majority of our programming is 5 to 10 hours a week. Educators, parents, business leaders, and school administrators have for years been advocating for increasing the intensity of early learning programs, especially programming for the students most at risk of falling behind their peers. Passing this provision in school readiness programs without funding to allow for this increase in service hours would lead to significant cuts in preschool programming, thus reducing the number of children served. Implementing this 12-hour minimum weekly service time would eliminate many of the choices the parents currently have for programming for their young learners, thus reducing the number of children the district would be able to serve throughout the year. We currently are able to collaborate with our partners in education, the early childhood special ed programs, adult basic education, Head Start, and family literacy programs to provide early ed opportunities that create a wonderful variety of programming options for the students and families. Access to programming would negatively be impacted as resources would not be available to offer the number of programs that the departments currently offer. We fear a decrease of upwards of 50% of the students that we're currently reaching would go without programming if we were to have to serve students a minimum of 12 hours a week. Many rural districts, especially out in my area in West Central Minnesota, would be unable to provide the number of opportunities that they're currently doing for programs for our early learners. An issue that we'd be really wary of right now is the fact that we have already begun our registration processes for programming next year. And the programming that is that folks are registering for now or are beginning to register for do not have this 12-hour threshold as part of the program development at this time. I guess to conclude, we all support the concept of higher standards, better assessment, better coordination and collaboration amongst early ed providers and many other provisions in this bill, but until the state is in a position to increase funding for early learning programs such as school readiness, it is our belief that we'd be better off with providing services of lesser intensity to a larger number of learners
than increasing the intensity of services for such a small percentage of our learners. Although not intended, this 12-hour limit amounts to an unfunded mandate for school readiness programming that many of us would not be able to meet. Let's continue to review the concept suggested by Louise Stoney and her work with the Early Education Caucus. This vision encouraged the differentiated system of family choice and service options. And I thank you for your efforts on behalf of the youngest learners of the state.
Thank you. Who would like to go next? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Stacey Stanley, and I am the Program Director for the Office of Equity and Integration at East Metro Integration District. East Metro Integration District is a collaborative of 11 districts, St. Paul, South St. Paul, Amber Grove Heights, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Egan, White Bear Lake, Stillwater, Roseville, Spring Lake Park, Matamida, South Washington County, and North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale Schools. We are a proud recipient of the After School Community Learning Grant Program. I am here today to speak in support of the HF 1026 bill, specifically the continuation of funding for after school and summer learning opportunities. As you and the other committee members know, after school and summer learning opportunities are crucial to ensuring the success of our young people. They have been proven to assist children and youth academically, as well as provide them skill-building opportunities and better prepare them for the classroom and future workforce. Specifically, these funds have helped to provide funding for 16 program sites, over 500 youth. We work on developing and increasing leadership, civic engagement, and a connection to school success. I want to thank you and the members of the committee for including funds for after-school and summer learning programs in this bill. The non-formal learning opportunities are often the best connection to formal school day learning opportunities and provide essential programming for many, many children and youth in the EMID member districts and several thousands of children across the state of Minnesota. Padre Vu was supposed to be here today, and she's unable to make it. However, I brought two more youth from our programs, and they would like to very briefly speak. First of all, I'd like to introduce Sean Sullivan.
Welcome to the committee. You need to state your name for the record because we're recording this, and then proceed with what your testimony.
Hi, Madam Chair and board members. I'm Sean Sullivan. I guess what I just want to say quickly is that it is really important to fund these things, at least for us, because the young people that benefit from it could be doing much worse things with their time. I feel like giving them this opportunity, it helps, like, kind of force them with their will to spend their time productively and not destructively, I guess. If that makes sense, I don't know.
Yes, I have an 18-year-old, almost 18-year-old, I get that.
Yeah. That was
so well worded.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Medina Mohammed, and I'm also one of those 500 participants of EMID group. And it has been a great experience in being part of the EMID group, and it gave me many key essential things that I need in life and to strive to be the best that I can be. And one of the key main things it gave me is self-confidence. Without it, I guess I wouldn't have even been here right now. And in class, I was always the quiet one that used to sit down and never talk. And now that I've been in part of many EMID group programs, I'm able to do that. And when the teacher asks who wants to go up and volunteer or do anything, I'll be the first one to raise my hand. And thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Now you can add to your resume that you've testified as a legislator, too. So we appreciate you coming down and sharing with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have one last one, Beth Meninga. From Wordsworth, I am going to ask Representative Rosenthal, Representative Lane, about the 12 hours. I think that's come up over the last day, and I think you've been working on that. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, and that you're going to be working on that over the next couple days?
Yes, we're looking at an amendment to say that according to funds available, rather than just mandating that you need to do it somehow or other without funding.
I think the intent is to serve as many kids as we can, and we're going to try and work the language so that happens, especially this next year when classes are already filled.
it's totally unfair to make them re-register. So we're working on it.
Okay. And so all of you in the audience are watching on TV today. You call Representative Rosenthal over his Easter break or Representative Lane and let them know how you feel about this and their suggestions. And then we can take an informal poll when you get back on how that went. And our last testifier, welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Beth Menninga, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm here to thank you on behalf of the St. Clair Foundation, the Minnesota Community Foundation, and our Head Start partners in Minnesota for including funds for WordsWork in House File 1026. I have to agree with Representative Mariani that we would prefer those dollars came from another place, because my heart is with the whole early childhood community. I remember Frances Lemke, for those of you who may have been around when she was advocating for Child Care Works, and it's very heartening to be here today and see a committee focused on early childhood doing difficult work, but bringing early childhood to the fore. So thank you for investing in us, and that's all I have to say. You have lots of other work to do.
601, any other questions or business numbers? With that, have a good break, and we will see you on Tuesday. Meeting is adjourned.